Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Wonder of You by Susan May Warren, narrated by Joelle Ann Jacob. Prologue. My dearest Amelia, I suspect, should you ever read this, it might be on the back of an elephant while venturing through the jungles of India, or perhaps in a dugout canoe, paddling down the Amazon, or even most likely, while capturing the sunrise over the grasslands of some African country. For I know God has great plans for you, my beautiful youngest, the one who has always looked beyond the horizon, and inside you is the courage to reach for that horizon. You, more than any of the others, possess an independent spirit to drive you out of the family embrace and into the world. I have no doubt that comes from your father, who always nursed an adventure-seeking spirit. I hope it is also because of your confidence in our love for you, the surety that you can always come home. But I pray this independent spirit quickens inside enough to push you past your own limited vision to see the one God has for you. I know the challenge of the youngest is always to discover her own voice in the chorus. Yes, Amelia, you are the culmination of all the wonderful traits I see in your siblings. Derek's courage, Eden's loyalty, Grace's resourcefulness, Casper's thirst for treasure, and Owen's singular focused passion. You are my cherry on top of the sundae, and yet you are also so much more. You are also unique in the vision God has given you to see the world through His lens. You are beautiful and patient, giving and kind, and the one who helps us see ourselves the way God does. Unique and cherished despite our blemishes. This gift is precious and desperately needed in our world. Amelia, you help us see others. I pray that God will also help you see yourself. It is so easy to get trapped inside the picture we create for ourselves. As the youngest, you've been sheltered, overprotected, and constantly advised. If they could, your siblings would arrange for your future, leaving nothing to chance. Your challenge is to look past the view others choose for you. Look past even your own limited perspective and see the view your Heavenly Father has chosen for you. Lay hold of the vision and don't let go. Do not settle for the expected, the known, only because you can't see past today's focal point to all God has for you. There is more left to discover of Amelia Christensen, and it will be, to use your word, epic. Break free of your own expectations and see what vista awaits. Know that you carry my heart with you wherever you go, and that I will always be here, waiting to welcome you home, my brilliant, beautiful daughter, your mother. Chapter 1. The danger of living in a big family was that, to do anything of notice, a person had to go big or go home. Amelia had leaped, hoping to grab a hold of her dreams, show every one of her 5 siblings that she was just as amazing as the rest of them. The whole thing wouldn't have been so epically tragic if Amelia hadn't harbored such high hopes. A year in Prague, chasing her vision of becoming a professional photographer, Go big or go home. Amelia moved to take a wider angle shot of the couple. Sabine, her lush brown hair up in a loopy, messy bun, was caught inside the embrace of her groom, Kirby Houston, swaying to the Blue Monkeys' version of I've Had the Time of My Life. The song lured couples onto the tiled dance floor, under the twinkling lights strewn from the faux pine trees that framed the reception and pool area of the Mad Moose Motel. A rock-edged garden area, brimming with early-blooming violets and irises, combined with the aroma of potted hydrangeas on the tables and the heady smell of the roses twining up the wedding arch, managed to conjure the necessary magic for a North Shore in early May wedding, despite the chlorinated air. More, tonight the heavens were cooperating, the stars sprinkling the glass canopy with hopes of tomorrow, the moon a perfect halo of divine approval. The viewfinder framed a life Amelia Christensen knew she should want. But after the crash and burn in Prague, and her hightail back to the one-sled dog town of Deep Haven, Minnesota, she wasn't sure what she'd describe as her own personally happily ever after. Adventure? True love? Maybe just a good reason to get out of bed in the morning. One that didn't include Big Brother Derek's list of housekeeping to-dos at the Evergreen Resort, thank you. At least she'd landed a gig, albeit free, taking pictures at her friend Sabine's wedding. She adjusted the focus on her Canon EOS Rebel, taking a number of burst shots as Kirby twirled Sabine out and back in. She checked the shots, increased the shutter speed, and climbed on a chair, just in case one of the dancers decided to cut into her frame.
For crying out loud, Amelia, you act like you're stalking Sasquatch. It's a wedding, not a show on Animal Planet.
The voice came from behind her, a husky familiar tenor that could still send ripples through her entire body. She held out her hand, not taking her eye from the viewfinder, and pinched her fingers together.
Zip it, Seth. I'm working.
You're not working. You're not even the official photographer.
She glanced at him. One does not need to be paid to do a good job. Sabine asked me to take photos, and one of these is going to be... Oh, shoot! Kirby swung his bride down into a dip as the song ended, and it would have been exactly the breathtaking shot she'd waited for. Sabine's head thrown back, her dark hair trickling over Kirby's arms, a smile playing on her lips, the intoxicating surrender of a woman in love.
I missed it!
Amelia snapped one last smooch between Kirby and Sabine before climbing off the chair, Seth's hand at her elbow.
I have no doubt you have about 3,000 good shots from tonight. Now please put the camera down and dance with your boyfriend.
He smiled at the word, and Amelia didn't have the heart to contradict him. Later she'd remind him that she hadn't agreed to officially date again. Just because she'd failed in her first post-high school launch attempt didn't mean she'd returned to pick up where they left off. Except Seth's voice could still elicit the sweet tingle of heat inside her, just like it did when he used to find her after a victorious football game, his blonde hair wet from his shower, smelling of Axe and turning her world just a little smoky. He'd always slicked up well off the field also, tonight wearing a white dress shirt, open at the neck, the fabric tight against his frame, honed by hours of cutting wood at his father's lumber mill. He wore a pair of black dress pants, slim at his waist, creased to a fine edge, as if he might be trying to prove something. His hair brushed his shoulders, begging to be tangled with her fingers, and his brown eyes fixed on her so long it should stop her heart in her chest. It occurred to her that maybe God had returned her to Deep Haven after a semester abroad because she never should have left. Seth's voice turned soft as his hand closed on the camera and urged it out of her grip.
Please put the camera down and let's dance.
On the dance floor, Kyle Houston, drummer for the Blue Monkeys, took the mic. He'd shucked off his gray vest,
wore his black shirt rolled up at the forearms, and beamed at Kirby and Sabine, then the audience.
You might not know it, but my little bro is an Elvis junkie. Kerbs, this one's for you and your girl.
Behind Kyle, his wife Emma strummed the introductory chords. His low baritone began.
Wise men say, only fools rush in.
Amelia wanted to wince at the way the lyrics rubbed along her conscience, hitting her choices from the past year, and most recently, the blow-up at the Christensen family home. But Seth seemed to not notice as he unwound the camera strap from her neck.
I've been waiting all night to have you to myself, he said.
Seth, he set the camera on the folding chair and took her hand.
It'll be there when you get back.
She couldn't exactly protest with the town watching. Besides, Deephaven expected them to dance. Probably thought they'd be next. A thought Seth confirmed as he took her into his arms.
Maybe we should start thinking about our own wedding playlist.
Oh, boy. He wrapped one big linebacker hand behind her, the other he held out for her to grasp. Since when did you learn how to do more than sway? She said as she took it.
I may not be as fancy as that jerk from Europe, but I am house-trained.
Yep, clearly something to prove. She couldn't be sure where he'd gotten his information about her recent unexpected guest, but someone, maybe even a traitor from the House of Christensen, had spilled her secrets, probably in an attempt to keep her from repeating her mistakes. She'd hunt down her brothers and pry out the truth at the next family campfire. Now, she met Seth's eyes and recognized hurt behind the veneer of redneck bravado. Rourke is gone, and he's not coming back. There, she said it out loud, despite the echo of Rourke's words rising up to haunt her.
We belong together. Please forgive me. Mr. James Bond had better not show his face in Deephaven again, Seth said, or he'll get a taste of what...
Seth... Stop. She pressed her hand against his lips. He made a face.
Sorry. You're right.
Amelia leaned into him, winding her arm around his shoulder, laying her head on his chest. The familiarity of being in his broad, safe embrace caught her up, spoke to her. Maybe she needed this. Needed Seth. The boy she'd shared her first kiss with. Shared dreams and unraveled her fears with, as they lounged under the stars on a beach blanket of stones, the great Lake Superior lapping at their feet. Always, until she left for Prague, those dreams had included each other.
Amelia, there you are!
The voice was too high, too loud, to be sober, and of course it belonged to Vivian Calhoun.
Hey, Seth!
She said, then took Amelia's hand.
Come on, I got something to show you.
Viv, we're dancing here, Seth said, a growl in the back of his throat.
Whatever, Seth. Deal. Come on, Ames.
Vivian tugged her across the dance floor, leaving the hint of something stronger than wine in her wake. Amelia threw an I'll be right back glance over her shoulder to Seth. Or maybe she wouldn't. Because Vivi pulled her across the reception area, Amelia breaking free long enough to grab her camera, then through the lobby and outside to the parking lot, where the sky shimmered with starlight, the night air sweet with the buds of spring.
What? You'll see.
Vivi wore her sable hair long and loose in waves, and if possible, she'd lost even more weight since jetting off to a New York City film school. Her body rail thin in a light blue baby doll dress, her legs as long as the Empire State Building in wedge platform sandals. She looked like the movie star she longed to become. At least one of Amelia's high school friends had reached for her dreams and not fallen on her face. Except Sabine, the bride, also had her dreams safely in her grip, finally tying the knot with the boy she'd loved since sixth grade, even if he didn't figure it out until last summer. Vivi wove her way through a tangle of cars, then out along the long drive of the motel, where more cars edged the grass.
Look what I'm driving.
She pointed, even as Amelia stopped, shot her a look.
No. Really? That's right, baby. A vintage 1967 cherry red convertible Mustang.
Vivian slid onto the hood and posed like she might be Betty Page.
And it's all mine. Sorta.
Amelia ran her hand across the hood, glanced at Ree Zimmerman, sitting in the passenger seat.
Sorta?
Ree, an aspiring journalist, wedged in freelance hours at the Deep Haven paper between helping her parents with the 24-room Mad Moose Motel. Tonight, her short blonde hair was held back with a gold headband, and she wore a faded jean jacket over her lime green dress. She'd pulled off her sandals, now held them in her grip, dangling out the window. Amelia should have grabbed her sweater to put over her own coral swing dress.
How long have you known about this? She said to Ree.
Just now. She pulled up and I thought I'd better come along quietly.
Ree made a face.
Get in the driver's seat. I grabbed the keys.
She dangled them from her hand.
Hey, those are mine,
Vivian said, sliding off the hood and leaning over to swipe them. She missed, and Amelia opened the driver's door, pulled down the front seat.
Get in, Vivi. We'll pretend it's red carpet night.
Vivian climbed in, sitting high on the back as if she were Miss Minnesota.
So, it's a wicked ride, right?
Amelia got behind the wheel, ran her hand over the red leather seat, the shiny red steering wheel, the polished chrome radio knobs.
Is it really yours?
It is for now. My new boyfriend let me borrow it.
Your boyfriend let you borrow his vintage Mustang?
Ree said.
Sheesh, Viv. Who is this guy?
She shot a look at Amelia. Amelia could read the question on her face. What did he get in return? Or maybe she just heard it inside. Amelia had managed all of 2 emails to Vivian since hopping the pond to Prague and back. She simply couldn't face her own failures against the shiny victories of her girlfriends. But maybe she shouldn't count Vivi's new role as a victory.
Just a producer friend.
Vivian said it like they all inhabited that world.
But,
she slid down onto the back seat,
let's talk about Rourke.
She enunciated the name with a long roll of her R's.
Darling, a Brit? Was he royal?
Just when Amelia thought she'd shaken off the specter of her mistakes for the evening.
How about we talk about something?
Oh no, honey, Ree, the betrayer, said. We want all the juicy details.
I didn't even know there was a scandal until a couple weeks ago, after the dust-up with your brothers.
It wasn't a scandal, Amelia started.
Not true, Vivi said. Everyone's talking about the hot souvenir Amelia Christensen brought back from her trip to Prague.
He wasn't hot, Ree turned to Vivi. For the record, he could melt a girl from 50 feet. Tall, he's probably 6'2", with dark curly hair and blue eyes brimming with mystery. Very M16 super spy with a nice stack of muscles.
Ree?
He went swimming. I looked. Shoot me. But, oh, the shoulders. I'm sorry, but Seth is all brawn. This one is chiseled.
Stop.
And did I mention the accent? He was all fancy this and rubbish that, with a few blimeys and chips and hosses for crosses thrown in.
I'd work the front desk just in hopes he'd come down and ask for more towels.
He stayed here?
Vivian said, leaning forward between the seats. Where else was he going to stay? Ree said. My parents offered him a room half off after the Christensens practically tarred and feathered him and rode him off their property on a rail.
Oh, we did not, Amelia said.
Well, they sorta had, or her brothers had, got in his face, yelling. Casper just might have hit him had her father not intervened, and more yelling outside in the driveway before he finally drove away. The memory elicited a groan that made Amelia bury her face in her hands.
How bad was it really, Ames? Vivi said.
Amelia leaned back, stared at the stars overhead. More Elvis, Love Me Tender, drifted out from the reception. Maybe Seth was on his way to rescue her. What she really wanted to do, though, was put the car in gear and drive away, flee the humiliation, not to mention her future, the one she saw before her like handwriting on the wall. Not quite the life she'd dreamed of when she jetted off to Europe last fall.
Start with where you two met. Was it romantic?
The Charles Bridge at sunset, turning the Vltava River to deep crimson. The sky mottled with tufts of light purple, maroon, and burnt orange. The smell of roasted pork and cinnamon tredelnik. The taste of adventure rich and full as she caught the laughter of nearby lovebirds tossing wishes from the bridge. It was Prague. Everything in Prague is romantic. Ree glanced at Vivi. And this is why I want to escape Deep Haven and see the world. I'd like to meet a handsome man in some exotic location.
What? You don't think covering the doings of the city council for the Deep Haven Herald is exotic enough?
Vivi said. Ree ignored her. What did he say, first thing, when he met you? That wishes come true if you touch the cross of St. John of Nepomuk. The voice, low, sharp with accent, belonged to a man dressed in a pair of crisp jeans, a gray printed t-shirt, and a blue cardigan, open in the wind, that only accentuated the mottled blue of his eyes. He wore a messenger bag over his shoulder, held a camera.
Oh, Amelia.
Vivian rested her head on the seat, sighing.
What happened?
What happened? Was it possible to look at someone and just... No? To see your own future in his eyes? Probably not. Amelia blamed the magic, the adventure of Prague.
He
made me feel brave, smart, beautiful, foolish.
I heard he was older than you.
Vivi said. 5 years, but it didn't seem that way. He was just another photography student in my group. Then, by the time I found out, it didn't matter. I met him first on the Charles Bridge, then in Old Town Square. Then we started working on assignments together. Anyway, of course he was charming, and I read way too much into it. Oh, no. This from Ree. It was after we'd spent Christmas together on the same trip to Italy, Switzerland, and France that I thought we were... Well... I thought I loved him. Then one day, after we got back to Prague, I was walking to class and saw him on the Charles Bridge, in the arms of another woman.
Jerk!
Ree again. We had a big fight. I was so angry I refused to talk to him, even after he claimed they were just friends. And then he left the country. Vanished. No explanation. Nothing. And I realized I had read way more into the relationship than he had. In fact, that's when I put it together. He didn't have a job. He spent money like he didn't care where it came from. And he knew food, art, wine, and...
Women! Oh, Ames! You fell for a European playboy,
Vivi said, clamping her hand over her mouth, eyes wide.
Girl, I didn't know you had it in you.
Amelia winced, but didn't contradict her. Yes, that was the worst part, feeling like just another conquest by a man she thought she could love. Not that it went that far, but the realization horrified her, humiliated her. No wonder your father dragged you home, Ree said. He didn't exactly drag me home. He and Mom came to visit for Valentine's Day, and by then Prague had lost its luster. Or rather, her bravado had vanished and left behind a girl she didn't know, afraid, unseated. And 2 months later, Rourke has the nerve to show up at your house and ask your forgiveness? Ree said. Okay, your brothers are heroes in my book for chasing him away.
Wow, you dated a European playboy.
Vivi seemed caught on some version of Rourke that Amelia knew needed amending.
Did you kiss him?
Once, on New Year's Eve.
That's it? A New Year's Eve kiss?
Even Ree shook her head. See, maybe we weren't even dating. Maybe I just made it up in my head. Maybe I overreacted to the whole thing. And now I feel even more foolish. Thankfully, it's over. He's gone, and I can just start again. Except 3 months after returning home, she still struggled to get her footing. She'd forfeited the rest of her one-year photography course by fleeing home. Too late, sadly, to enroll in another program. And maybe she didn't even want to. Maybe this simply proved she wasn't the adventurer she hoped to be.
But wait, Rourke came all the way over here. Faced your family.
Playboy or not, that sounds contrite to me, Vivian said. Even romantic. Apparently you made more of an impact on him than you thought. Please tell me you forgave him. Amelia leaned back, lost herself in the swirl of stars. So much light against the darkness. So many what-ifs. Like, what if she had forgiven him? What if she had believed him when he said he hadn't meant to hurt her? What if she'd held on to her courage? Stayed in Prague. She might be having a summer of adventure in Italy instead of sitting in a parked Mustang, trapped between a Prius and a Chevy Silverado. How was she supposed to forgive him with a wall of Christensen brothers standing there glaring at him? Ree said.
I'd do just about anything to have even one of the Christensen brothers glance in my general direction, Vivian said. But that's a dream that'll never happen. So, did they really run him off the property?
Amelia sighed, remembering Casper's disbelief, then Derek's suggestion that Rourke leave, not to mention the sudden hovering of her brother-in-law Jace and her sister Grace's fiancé Max, as if they'd adopted the family role to meddle in her life. It wouldn't have been so bad, maybe, if Casper hadn't spilled to the family just how much he hurt me, adding in a few of his own suggestions about Rourke being a European playboy. Rourke didn't contradict him, and my dad asked him to leave. And he just stood there, as if he wasn't leaving.
Oh, it's so West Side Story, Ree said. No, it was scary. It got very silent, and my father took one of those deep breaths, and then he made the face.
The one he made when he found us playing spin the bottle in the basement with Seth and the guys? Ree said.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I remember that face, Vivian said. No wonder Rourke ran.
That's the thing. He didn't exactly run. My brothers pushed him out into the yard, and even after he drove away, he stuck around, calling.
And you never talked to him?
Vivi shook her head. Amelia closed her eyes. And suddenly the sight of Rourke, dressed in his...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?